right, welcome to Highly Questionable. We got Izzy Gutierrez on one side. We got Dominique Foxworth on the other. And the next time you see him, he'll be wearing a different shirt.
Magic of television.
Who has more pressure to win this series now, KD or Giannis?
Boy, I got to tell you, as somebody who picked the Bucks to win this series and was feeling rather foolish after they were getting their doors blown off, it does feel good to be able to say, well, you know, part of the calculus on my decision had to do with the fact that the Nets have had injury issues all year long, and they popped out. They are down basically to Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving rolled his ankle. I don't have a medical degree, but I do have an ankle, and I feel pretty confident after seeing that one. He's not going to be playing for the rest of this series. But the pressure's on Giannis. The pressure is not on two-time NBA champion, two-time finals MVP, Kevin Durant, while being surrounded by a team that looks a lot like that 2013 Thunder team after Russell Westbrook got hurt. There's only so much that you can ask of him. Even with a fully loaded Nets team, it was fair to ask Giannis and the Bucks to come out with a victory. And what's been damning for Giannis so far this series, aside from the fact that Budenholzer doesn't do anything to get him any easy shots, it's the fact that he's allowed Blake Griffin to guard him. The one criticism we've had for Blake Griffin for his whole career is that he's not good at defense. And Blake Griffin has been guarding Giannis by not guarding Giannis, and it has worked. So, yeah, if the Bucks don't win this one, especially with all the injuries that the Nets have, oh, no, we're coming straight to him because they're going to fire the coach after that happens, and there will be no one left to blame.
Yeah, I don't know who exactly is putting a bunch of pressure on KD now that he's by himself, as if there's more of a reason for him to come through now that he doesn't have his all-star and MVP caliber teammates with him. I definitely think it's more on Giannis, and I think part of this whole frustration has been watching them play. And it's like you said, Bo, Mike Budenholzer hasn't put him in situations to get a bunch of easy baskets, but he hasn't actually fixed the offense overall either, because when any of these other guys sort of fail on Giannis, then it's all on him. And then he doesn't really know how to operate there. Sometimes it's pull up for three and has the announcer saying, what are you doing? And I think the most frustrating thing about these Bucks is we say that these Nets couldn't defend and that was their big issue. Well, it doesn't matter what team you are. If you're that level of team, you can defend for a little bit, right? You can defend for the first 5-6 seconds of a shot clock. You got to make them keep defending. And it was so infuriating with this team going one pass shot, zero pass shot, Giannis trying to get to the rim. It just wasn't working. And then finally they hit some shots and then they get a little bit more comfortable in their offense and look a little bit more like the Bucks. It seems like now they're a lot more comfortable. And even if Kyrie was there, they'd be able to give them a fight here. But no, this is on Giannis to keep this going. And if Kyrie does not come back, and I have two ankles, and I know that he's not coming back, I definitely think they should win the next two games in this series, the Bucks, and close out the Nets.
All right, well, you guys have already taken us through the proper take cycle. So now I need to take us to the next level. You know who is under the most pressure? It's Coach Budenholzer. Like, and also his name. Hearing you guys say his name a couple of times, like, his name lends itself to very mocking headlines when they don't win this series. Like, Coach Booty fails again, or Hoozer blows it. Like, it's going to be a problem because of his name and because of, frankly, how poorly he's been managing Giannis for, I mean, I don't want to say all of his career because he's a two-time MVP, but it seems more and more clear to me that he's a center that should be doing center things. And put him out on the perimeter is exposing him to situations that allows for somebody like Blake Griffin to slow him down. And I understand this Nets team was loaded, and they might have been able to excuse their way out of this and pointed to the Nets as some constructed, contrived super team that's not fair. We shouldn't be blamed for this. But now it's KD and some dudes. So, of course, they have no excuse if they don't win this series right now. Frankly, they have no excuse if they don't find themselves in the NBA Finals. But first things first, it's this series, and the pressure is on Budenholzer, and the pressure is on Giannis. But there's a good deal of pressure potentially on KD, because this is everything he's ever wanted, right? Like, this is everything that we read about him thinking that his life was going to change after he won Finals MVP, and it didn't. Him assuming that people were going to appreciate him as the best player in the world when he was frankly playing like that for a long stretch in Golden State. This is going to do more for his legacy in the eyes of many fans and a lot of people in sports media than winning either of those finals did with the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, Dominique, let me tell you this. You say that pressure's on Budenholzer. It don't look like the pressure's on him. He look like he's just doing the same stuff he always been doing, right? Like, hey, if I get fired, I get fired. They're probably not going to fire me, right? Like, on that part, I'm just kind of there. Now, when you say that Giannis needs to do center things, he can't do center things. Like, that's what the biggest problem is. If he could, he would just put his back on Blake Griffin and hit him with hook after hook after hook. He's not doing it because he can't do it. And so what makes it worse is
Giannis is guarding himself. Right. He's guarding himself on the floor, and he's definitely guarding himself at the free throw line. He's the first player I've ever seen that's got to shoot free throws over somebody. It's just that the person is a ghost.
Was it unfair that Nikola Jokic got tossed last night?
All right, the MVP that we refuse to treat like an MVP was summarily dismissed from the postseason last night. Nuggets are depleted. They didn't have much left, and the Suns look like they're really, really good. But it was looking like the Nuggets were getting a little bit of a comeback going, and then Jokic decided, he said himself, that he wanted to try to, like, turn the tide a little bit with a play. The Jokic has it.
Foul.
Now, at first, it just looked like he was going for the ball and maybe campaign was flopping. Like, that's what it seemed to be. No, he caught him in the face, and then he got the ball, and then Devin Booker did that thing that you have to do, which is run up on a dude in a moment like that, and then he quickly learned, yo, Serbia go hard too. Yeah. Now, did he deserve to be ejected? You can make the argument, because look where he started, right? The NBA does not want people winding up that hard, even if they wind up ultimately getting the ball. However, that is the MVP here. Right? And we don't treat this dude like the MVP. But do you think, for example, LeBron James would get ejected from a game for that player, even Giannis or even James Harden? That's the question we have. So, like, letter of the law, yeah, that gets you tossed. But this is the end of one of the great individual basketball seasons anybody has ever had that nobody wants to treat like it happened. And so that's almost a fitting culmination. The MVP not getting an MVP call.
Yeah, Henry Abbott from True Hoops has the numbers up. In the last 2 minutes of games, Jokic is officiated more poorly than just about anybody else in the league as far as big men are concerned. So that matters, except he also has a history of being frustrated and then lashing out on his opponent because he's frustrated with the officials. So I think that is a bigger problem than anything else we're talking about. So I understand we don't want to eject the MVP in that particular moment, but let's be clear about what moment we're talking about. They're done. Like, the worst possible outcome right there is this escalates because he's frustrated and he can't control his big Serbian paws coming down on somebody's face. So you can all downplay how much it only grazed his nose. Go ahead and put your face in front of a 7 foot, 300 pound Serbian who cocked back and swung it. Look at this. Like, I don't care what you say. And let's remember, I'm the football player watching this, and I do not want any parts of that. So if I'm Cameron Payne, I want him thrown all the way out the league. You can't swing those deadly weapons around at people's faces like that. I understand everyone's like, we got to leave him in. He's the MVP. Yes, I'm fine with that. We got to treat him like an MVP. Okay, best possible scenario, we leave him in. They come back, we get another game, and then they're out. Worst possible scenario, this escalates into something where we got to suspend a whole lot more people. Go ahead and send him to the locker room. He had four games to impose his will. He didn't do it. Too bad.
I hate to argue with you, Dominique, about something that we can't prove, but, like, that was some acting by campaign. And I think this is what, like, people in the league or the tweeters are all talking about when they say the league is soft. If you're playing in a pickup game, Dom, and somebody falls and reacts like that, two things are happening. Either one, he's done, he's out of the game, it's too much, he's hurt, or the game's done because it's that bad of a foul. That's the type of reaction Payne had there. It was an overreaction, and that got into the thinking of the referees. I don't know how the referees didn't come and huddle up and say, we're really about to kick out the MVP and his swan song. He's about to get swept, and we're about to kick this dude out. And one of the more heartwarming MVPs in a while, like, we're going to kick this dude out. It was a bit of a joke. I'm with you. Like, LeBron doesn't get kicked out there. Other stars don't get kicked out there. It's kind of weird. However, he is kind of the reason Chris Paul was able to go off. Like, we're giving him the MVP, right, because of his offensive numbers. Defensively, he is very much the reason Chris Paul was able to get that mid-range shot whenever he wanted to. It's very frustrating for his teammates to be able to say, oh, yeah, he's carrying us. But defensively, we kind of have to make up for him.
How can you say so much? Like, Bomani got to get you. I got to get you. Everybody got to get you.
Come on. Come on.
Yeah. My disagreement on that one was it was very clear who they were targeting when Chris Paul went on that shooting spree full of shots that anybody in the NBA could make. And that person was Michael Porter Jr. Yeah. That dude at one point got so scared to switch off that he basically said to the world, it's better if I don't play defense than if I do. Like, I actually found myself impressed by Jokic and his effort on defense throughout this postseason. Like, we kind of profiling him on that one. Michael Porter Jr., on the other hand, is like, dog, why can't we hurry up and go get buckets again?
Up next on HQ.
Mark Cuban, what kind of business are you running? Because we knew other things about your business that showed that it was poorly run. And now this is not nearly as consequential as that, but going to be problematic in terms of running basketball here. You can't have somebody who doesn't have actual authority who is actually in charge. Those things have to be spelled out.
Highly Questionable is brought to you by Bayer. Today, let's paint. And Heineken. enjoy Heineken responsibly. Should the Mavs be worried about their relationship with Luka Doncic?
All right, Tim Cato of The Athletic wrote a behind-the-scenes story about, you know, the politics and machinations of what happens with the Mavericks. And basically, Bob Vulgaris, who many of you may follow on Twitter, is a professional gambler who Mark Cuban hired in 2018 to be a consultant of sort who seems to be now the guy sitting next to Mark Cuban. And as the story points out, Cuban is the most powerful man in the organization, and whoever he listens to is number two. He seems to listen to Bob Vulgaris. Luka Doncic does not appear to like Bob Vulgaris. Rick Carlisle does not appear to like Bob Vulgaris. The executive suite of the Mavericks does not appear to like him. And I say that because this story came out. And if you had to guess where it came from, it probably came in that general direction. The concern that I would have, though, is less about how Luka feels about this than the dealings with Rick Carlisle. Because the issue is, it seems that Vulgaris is recommending lineups, that he's the one telling whom to play at different points. And if you're a head coach and your players do not believe that you decide who goes in the game, you are done. You have absolutely no authority, because them performing for you and doing the things you say is because they believe the things you say for them to do are the things that are going to get them playing time. If the guy with the laptop over there is the one that's supposed to do it, oh no, Carlisle then is done. And then on top of it, Luka Doncic doesn't like this dude. Mark Cuban, what kind of business are you running? Because we knew other things about your business that showed that it was poorly run. And now this is not nearly as consequential as that, but going to be problematic in terms of running basketball here. You can't have somebody who doesn't have actual authority who is actually in charge. Those things have to be spelled out. And you got a great situation that could turn into a disaster.
That question about what kind of business are you running is an important one, because sometimes a great product can overshadow a bad business. And not to say that the players are products, but we talked about before how incredible Dirk Nowitzki was. And like, for all the time he was there, he made that organization seem probably or perform better than it was actually run. And then again, they find themselves getting Luka, and maybe trading for that is a credit to their organization. They made one good decision. But again, it seems like they are not surrounding him with the right type of players. And he's making this organization more successful than it potentially should be. So right now, I'm not sure what kind of business they're running, especially when they bring in a gambler and he seems to have all the power. But you're right, Bo, what you started on at the top of this, and maybe Luka wants him out also, but it seems like it's not just Luka. Everyone has a problem with him, and it was most exemplified by one quote that I saw in there that I didn't know anyone said other than like 12-year-old black kids, is he don't know how to talk to people. That was the quote that stood out to me. He don't know how to talk to people. Like, if it boils down to that, your numbers guy doesn't know how to talk to people, you got a long way to go. And I don't think he's long for the organization. If it seems like Don Nelson, Rick Carlisle, and Luka Doncic don't got a taste for this man, one must go, or all of them got to go. Sorry, Bob.
Yeah, you know, I look at this situation and you just kind of wonder how it happens, how somebody who comes in 2018 all of a sudden seems to have like second person in control type of power, who can sort of trickle down to the head coach to the point where the players don't like him. But Bo, I would worry a lot about what Luka Doncic thinks, because look where we are now in the place of sort of player empowerment. Like, look where Green Bay is right now with Aaron Rodgers, okay? And you're talking about Luka Doncic arguably sort of filling in for LeBron, stepping in for LeBron as the game's most complete player, as the game's most, you know, must-see player. You're going to need to worry about his feelings. And if you've got somebody already who is not happy with the situation, and he's obviously still in the heart of his first contract there, then yeah, I would be very much concerned, especially since it just seemed to come out like out of nowhere. And it seemed like, you're right, Bo, this would be leaked from one of those two sources. So very much sort of a nip it in the bud situation if I'm Mark Cuban, because I'm putting Luka Doncic over everybody else in that organization.
Yeah. Only reason I said that about Luka is he gonna take that supermax they offer him. Like, that part, like that part you ain't got to worry about. He is not going to walk away from that money. But like, if he were later in his later deal, oh yeah, Bob will be out of here today.
Highly Questionable is brought to you by Ratchet and Clank, Rift Apart, rated everyone 10 and up, and ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Do you question if Kyler Murray is right?
All right, so I'll give you some details about Kyler Murray. One, he grew up in the Dallas area. Two, he was born in 1997, the year I graduated from high school. No, I do not feel old. Now, with those details, Kyler Murray was asked whether he was a Cowboys fan growing up.
You gotta be a Cowboys fan. No?
They were always
like, well, here we go. Okay.
Before I was born,
they were 23.
I like the Vikings, bro.
Yeah.
Dog, that is so harsh, right? Because you got to understand, like, before the Super Bowls, when I was a kid, they were legitimately bad. And Dallas was still out there with them. They sold out all the games where they went 1-15. Like, people really care. This stretch he's talking about, they weren't even actually that bad. Like, they weren't great, but they weren't abject. They weren't terrible.
Like, I imagine him coming out of the womb, basically like a one-year-old sitting there like, oh, this Randy Moss is a heck of a rookie. I'm going to be a Vikings fan. Like, how do you live in Texas? You almost have to be a hater to not be a Cowboys fan. I know this in Miami. It happens all the time. I know so many people who don't like the Dolphins fans. Why? No reason. They just hate them. But you would have to be a hater to not like the Cowboys in Texas. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, you can't be surprised. Everyone knows that kid who was like, oh, everyone likes this? Well, I'm going to go the other way. We just learned that Kyler Murray was that guy because assuming he wasn't a football watcher at birth. I'm assuming he really got into football around the time he was 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere around that. And the Cowboys were getting to the playoffs. They weren't winning any games, but they were getting to the playoffs. Tony Romo was out there looking successful and impressive. They had players. There was reason to root for them. They weren't like they were not a team that couldn't win ever, but I could understand if you want to latch on to a winner. But Monty, you speak to this all the time. Why latch on to the Cowboys? But then, why choose the Vikings?
That's what I'm saying. It's not like he went and picked the Patriots.
Do you question if this dog should have kept going?
All I'm saying is, y'all get all excited about this dog show with the dogs running around and stuff. Y'all ever seen a rodeo? Like, that's real excitement if you want to see animals do athletic things and people being involved. Now we got this man running around at the agility
course.
Look at
that, good boy.
And boom. There you go. Turf monster. Ate him up. Ate him up. Then the poor
the
dog
Chris
didn't know
Cody
what to
of
do.
Dog trainers.
Wow. That couldn't have possibly gone worse. Did he have the what do they call it, kinesiology tape? The kinetic tape on his leg? Run that again if you don't mind again.
I think so.
Look at one of his legs. You're not even a real athlete, dog.
Oh, yeah, he do.
Oh, no.
I ain't never seen it in turquoise.
All I can talk about is that moment. I don't know if we could freeze it at that moment at the end where the dog is looking at him. Like, this reminds me right there. That's LeBron looking at J.R. Smith.
Yep.
That's all that is. That is LeBron looking at J.R. Smith. Like, I'm running. I'm doing all the work. I'm doing everything. You just had to not blow it. And he out here holding on to the ball in the last possession. And he couldn't even fall in the side. He falls in front of the dog. Like, I tend to not care about these competitions, but I am furious for that dog right now. He worked all year for that moment. And that fella just stumbled and ruined it.
Fella, stick with fella.
I don't normally care about these things either, but what a weird time it was yesterday. Because, like, I'm flipping through channels. I'm stuck on diving competitions.
Oh,
wow, this is great. And then I go over to Westminster. I'm like, this is even better. And I didn't see that situation, but I did see the winner. And I have a problem with Wasabi. Here's our winner over here. I have a problem with Wasabi winning. It's not just that it's just not the most exciting dog to look at, but Wasabi? Does this dog look particularly spicy to you? I mean, I don't know.
What,
like, just the name alone would make me not want
to
let
What did that dog do to win? I just look at that dog.
Don't
that don't look like no winner.
How can we
he couldn't even walk to get his own award.
And not talk about Barry Bonds. Like, he was there.
This is just amazing. Just to be here, to see it, it's beautiful. I've watched it on TV many of years. But to actually be here is amazing. And to actually have a dog here makes it even more gratifying. And I've been to a lot of playoffs and I've been to the World Series. I never won for 22 years and I kept trying. But the actual thing is just the work ethics, how you do, how you get there. And, you know, I'm just proud that he's here. I'm not expecting anything. I'm not looking at, I'm not nervous. I'm just proud that he did a great job and he qualified to get here.
I got a serious question. Is anybody at that show happy to see Barry Bonds? Like, I feel like that is the room of people least happy to see Barry Bonds. Only if it was a room full of Dodgers fans could they be less happy to see Barry Bonds.
Tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, Game 4, Jazz and Clippers.
Hey, Paul George brought it in Game 3 because every single game Paul George plays is a referendum on his entire career. Anyway, here he is talking about my man Joe Ingles of the Utah Jazz.
The broadcast of all series has picked up a lot of you and Joe Ingles talking either, you know, in between plays or at the free throw line. What's your relationship with him like now, you know, 3 years removed from the series when you were with Thunder? What are you guys good or what's your relationship with him?
I don't care about him. Next question.
Wow. I would never have expected Joe Ingles to be somebody that could elicit that sort of reaction out of people. But see, that goes to show what I know about the way Joe Ingles gets down. Izzy, are you intrigued?
Yes, I'd be much more surprised if his answer was the opposite. And I was like, oh, yeah, Joe Inglis and I, we hang out all the time. We go fishing. We go back to Oklahoma City. Yeah, no, of course that's going to be his answer.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good answer. Yes, I'm intrigued. Obviously, the game matters. I'm not intrigued necessarily for the Inglis versus playoff P matchup, but I'm intrigued by this game. And I thought that Paul George actually answered that in the best way possible.
I don't care about that dude. I think he could have just gone to next question, but no. Paul George wanted to make sure that we knew he thought Joe Inglis was beneath him. All right, that is our show. Izzy Gutierrez out here covering these NBA playoffs. Dominique Foxworth, check him out at The Undefeated and Foxworth Fridays on the right time with Bomani Jones.
And we love you, Poppy.